This is Ben Smith. I'm a photographer, and this is my podcast, A Small Voice, Conversations with Photographers. Thanks for listening. People, thanks for joining me for episode 111 of A Small Voice, Conversations with Photographers. It's a podcast. It's about photography and life. How's it going? I hope you're all well. Summer's going really fast, isn't it? It's August already. Obviously, that doesn't apply to you Aussies and Kiwis who are trying to get through the winter, but we're not done with the sun yet, so you have to be patient, if that's okay. I'm having quite a nice summer, actually. I could tell you all about it, but then I'd have to kill you. We wouldn't want that. So, listen, if you're a regular listener and you think this podcast is worth the price of a cup of coffee per episode, then please do sign up for a small recurring monthly subscription. Or if you prefer, make a larger occasional donation at bensmithphoto.com/a small voice. Do please leave a positive review on iTunes so that others may find out about this podcast. And if you do happen to need a new website, I can do that for you using the Squarespace platform so that you can use the valuable time you save taking pictures or doing something more interesting. So this week I am going to bring you a special report from the recent 50th anniversary edition of the Arles Photo Festival, which, as some of you will know, I went along to at the beginning of July, at which time Europe was basically on fire amid excessive summer temperatures, and you might hear it mentioned once or twice. Wait, listen. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the excellent Charcoal Book Club, the first and only book of the month club dedicated exclusively to photo books. Each month, Charcoal works with the most respected names in contemporary photography to select a first edition monograph that is a must-have for every collection. Each book arrives signed by the artist along with a note card and a print from an esteemed guest curator with free shipping to the US, Canada and the UK. All that along with members-only pricing in their online bookstore and more makes the Charcoal Book Club the best and most exciting way to stay up to date with essential work in contemporary photography. August Book of the Month is Omaha Sketchbook by Gregory Halpin, which I'm very much looking forward to getting. Hopefully one of these days I'll get Gregory on the podcast. Now, as some of you will be aware, I was stressing out about whether I had enough material to warrant putting this out. So I started screwing the whole thing together. And once I'd begun that process, I figured, oh, what the hell, this is actually quite entertaining. So why not just put it up and let everyone get what they will out of it? Those of you expecting some kind of a comprehensive review of the festival ought to manage your own expectations right now, because this isn't that. But it is just a little flavour of what happened to me personally, and that mainly involved hanging out with some lovely people, both personal mates and friends of the podcast, and it also involves an Odyssean quest for a lost photo book. Hang on, wait. This episode is sponsored by the equally excellent Finder.me, Finder.me, which is a two-sided marketplace for imaging professionals, providing clients with direct access to thousands of experienced photographers on a single platform, and in turn introducing photographers to hundreds of potential clients. Finder connects photographers with relevant customers based on location and type of photography services offered. Photographers can sign up quickly and easily and for free for corporate contracts at fixed rates, or they can set their own pricing to attract direct clients. And in stark contrast to some of their larger competitors, the lovely people at Finder care about you, the photographer, and they are committed to total transparency in the way that they do business. Finder's basically for everyone in the photography business, from wedding planners to artists. And if you are a photographer, regardless of what type of photographer you may be, go and open an account, fill out your profile, open up a whole new way of finding new work, finding new clients, and finding new opportunities. Join up for free at Finder.me and get found. So look, you'll hear all that. I hope you enjoy it. It's just a bit of fun. I have to admit, I was chuckling all the way through the editing process, so hopefully you'll find it amusing or entertaining in some way. And as always, informative in parts. Happy 50th birthday to the Arles Photo Festival, from which I bring you this Small Voice special. I'm here. I'm in Arles. I'm at the, 50th La Rencontre de la Photographie Exposition. I'm in Arles, officially, in the house. It's a very pretty place. I've never been before. So the 50th is going to be my first experience. and I'll be bringing the highlights to you so that you don't have to be here, in what is reportedly the hottest temperatures in the history of the human race on this earth. It's about 1,000 degrees, that's centigrade. So it's going to be really intense and hopefully a lot of fun. I am going to hopefully get a couple of chats in the can. I'm going to hang out with a whole bunch of photography related individuals, some of whom were on the dodgy Ryanair flight over from London this morning. It was nice to be in good company, and we are now here. I'm staying somewhat out of town, so that's going to be interesting. I mean, it's so hot that, yeah, I don't have to explain that to you, right? Anyway, what I'm going to be showing the book dummy Mark II, or V2, to anyone who can be asked to look at it. And I see that as a continuation from the Chico Portfolio Review episode, which some of you hopefully will have heard. We will kind of follow the ongoing saga of my book dummy, which I have, as I've kind of suggested, done a second version of. So I've now moved on from the blurb book, which was very sort of slick but kind of soulless, onto something entirely homemade, which is less soulless but also a bit shit, and the pages keep coming unstuck, and it looks all right. Actually, I'm doing myself a bit of a disservice. I did a decent job, okay? I made a book dummy. I kind of had a vague idea how to do it from back in the day when I used to make little portfolio books like that. And I don't know what the accepted way of doing it is, but I just did my own thing. And it's all right. It's fine. I just need to find some adhesive that actually works. Apparently adhesive isn't a thing that works these days. There you go. I blame Donald Trump. So I have no idea what's going to be happening. I will be trying to entertain you. And indeed entertain myself. We do have a swimming pool where I'm staying, so that is a massive plus. And there will be some beers drunk. Right, we're going into town now to see what's happening. Yesterday I didn't do anything apart from get incredibly dehydrated and go to bed early. So I'm in a car with a random collection of people. We've got Jack Latham's in the car, previously of this parish. Tristram Bjorn.
Bjorn.
Bjorn, I said that.
There is, you were close enough.
Yeah, it wasn't perfect. Aletheia Casey's here, and Keith Cullen is here from Satanta Books. He's sitting in the back like the kid.
He looks very comfy there as well.
We're fortified by a good breakfast where we discussed the essays of Edward Said and Marcel Proust. That was mainly what the conversation was. That wasn't it. It was mainly a conversation about genitalia, as far as I remember. We're very lowbrow.
Can I give the directions of our office? Is that possible? Festival office.
I don't know what we're going to be doing today. Oh, I know what we're going to be doing. We're going to go and see Jack Latham's new book, Parliament of Owls, is going to be launched fairly soon. And there is one copy in existence in Arles. Jack hasn't seen it yet. We're going to inspect the first ever copy of Jack's new book. Excited, Jack?
Very excited.
But he has genuinely not seen it, so it'd be good to get a look at that. And I will get a chat with him so he can explain to you all what that project is all about, because it is quite involved. Right, Jack Latham's in search of his book, which is currently in some location unknown. So the tension builds, really.
Very, very tense.
And is this literally the only copy?
It's my only copy.
Okay, this is the only copy. I won't disturb Jack because he's trying to like text and locate it, but we will get the lowdown on what this project is.
Good. I'm in the building now, the press building, and I'm just looking for the book. I was just wondering if it had arrived. I'm in front of the office now. Okay, I'll see you in a minute. It's not making it easier.
I'm sorry, shall I go away? Shall I fuck off? I can, totally.
Man. If you want to, I have it, and then...
Yeah, of course. I'll fuck off, but I did want to...
We'll do an unboxing. It's not right.
Yeah.
Not
yet.
Okay.
So maybe this afternoon, did you get your badge?
Yes, I got my badge.
Perfect.
So the texts that they sent you then was...
Yeah, like, on the road.
Okay, no book. So the book is not here. This is a bit of an anticlimax. Quite possible that this anticlimax will not make it into the podcast. So I'm here with Gregory Barker from Stanley Barker Books. Now, I've put him on the spot massively here, for you, my listener, because I got my book dummy out, because he is a professional book publisher. In case you don't know, Stanley Barker Books. I'm standing here with Cop, which is Christopher Anderson's latest book, published by Stanley Barker. And Chris has been doing some signing. So I'm totally just being opportunistic here, but I do think it would be really interesting to get a very kind of spontaneous, instant feedback from Gregory. And obviously, you know, it's a scary position to be in, and If he hates it, he'll probably won't full on tell me. But I'm very interested to hear what someone who's used to doing this a lot will say. And this is kind of continuing from, you know, the Chico Hot Springs stuff and the comments that I had there, which was a previous dummy, not this one. This one's a new one. So yeah, I'll let Gregory have a look at it. And I'm actually standing here this time. I didn't pussy out and run away, which I did in Montana, as some of you know.
So this is about Elephant Castle?
Tower Hamlets.
And we're following the process of gentrification.
Partly.
I mean, it kind of feels like you've got two sides to the book.
Right.
And you're like, one disappears kind of halfway through, and you like really focus in on like the artifice in the second half, and it becomes more about like you photographing the photographs.
Yeah. So which half disappears, do you think?
Like the people in the first half?
The people. Yeah. I mean, I feel like obviously one shouldn't need to explain too much, but I'm trying to play with this thing of having these architectural renders kind of as a kind of running motif and work, you know, combining those with the real pictures of real people and then sort of playing with that kind of ambiguity about what's real and what isn't. Does that come across to you, or is that kind of just confusing and messy?
No, I mean, it does, but I mean, there's a few things that are like a bit too much for me. Like,
right.
Where it says, like the text in the images, where it says, this is a, where is it?
Right.
Computer generated indicative only. Like that, to me, like, that breaks what it is that you're trying to do.
Right.
Because if you're playing with this idea of like what is real, what is not real, then that is, it's like a clear indicator.
Right. I think my idea initially was to make it very ambiguous at the beginning of the book, and then as you go through, it becomes progressively more apparent, you know, that you're looking at those things, and therefore the one with the text was sort of supposed to come at the end initially, if you see what I mean. But then it got, my sequencing got messed up.
It's also, I mean, it's a polemic, right? It's like,
I feel it isn't, but I mean, it's interesting you hear that. I feel it's very sort of, well, you know, I don't want it, I didn't intend it to be that way. It's interesting that you say that.
And that for me is like, it's too much. Like the fact you've got the bright orange and the bright orange next to each other. Where it's like, for me, like, you don't want to interrupt the process of looking. You want to, like, bring someone through a book where they're not necessarily aware what you're doing to them. Like, you want them to get that sense of, like, this is how we're going through it, but you don't want to put orange next to orange because it interrupts that. Then your brain goes, it's orange.
Right.
Where if you put that, just say, if you put that on the next hand, on the next page, on the left hand side, then it's a more subtle approach to the same thing.
Yeah, I think there's a kind of consistency to some of the comments that I'm kind of giving it all away too much, or that maybe things are too obvious. I don't know if that sort of resonates with you, but that's a recurring comment.
I think there's also just, like, I mean, how many pages is it? 40?
Yeah, something like, I think it's about 50 pictures now.
Yeah, I mean, that, like, for me, if you're not, you don't need to put two images together unless one is enhancing the other. If it's not, then have to, like, there's an economy, but, like, you don't
have them separate on their own,
and then do more.
Okay, I'm with you. Yeah, so less images maybe.
Yeah, it's like, if a pair, like that works as a pair, but then that, like, for me, the Muslims at prayer and the Hasidic Jew, like, it's, I can see too, what you're doing, and it's
too obvious.
That's irksome to me.
Right, irksome. Yeah.
Sorry, I mean, I'm being quite critical because I think
that's what I want you to be. That's entirely why you're here.
But,
thank you, man. I really appreciate being such a good sport, Gregory. That's brilliant. No, that's exactly the sort of thing. And you know, the listeners are kind of familiar with this by now because they have heard some of this going on already, and with previous people, because I went to a portfolio review in Montana, which I was invited to by my sponsor on the podcast, and that was sort of part of the process. So thank you for making
your pain.
Exactly. Welcome to my pain. Let them in. And thank you very much for your contribution, man.
That's fucking brave.
Well, you know, I mean, I guess I've learned how. Turns out the book is here after all, and no one can locate it. So that's good news and bad news. At least we know it's here, but we don't know quite where.
It's not there. They think it may have gone somewhere else.
There's
okay. No one there called Flo. So they're like, who's Flo?
Oh, so someone has taken receipt of it, but you don't know where, basically.
Don't know where.
Okay.
That's going to be my new project. It's finding my last project. They just don't know where.
Okay, so it's here somewhere.
Okay,
we're going to Open Walls exhibition. Alethea's got a picture in that exhibition of her mum. Well, her mum's bum, as she would put it, but it's not really her mum's bum. It's her mum's legs from behind. What is the Open Walls thing?
It's a BJP Open Walls Award, which is just around the corner, so let's go see.
Okay, so it's like individual images from different photographers all...
Exactly, yeah.
Okay,
exactly.
Cool.
That's one per photographer, I believe, and there's 52 works up. Actually, I haven't seen my print yet, so it'll be quite interesting.
Okay. I've actually come to an exhibition. Astoundingly enough, there will not be much exhibition stuff, I have to tell you guys, because I think I'm more concerned with just chatting with people and, you know, frankly, sitting around socialising, probably shoving my book dummy in front of people's faces as and when possible, and just hanging out. So I don't know how many exhibitions I'm going to actually get to go to, but I am... Oh,
hopefully they all have fans.
That's why you're standing here. Sorry, folks, that wasn't anything obscene. I just came across a massive fan. Not that kind of fan, although there are plenty of small voice fans, but... Oh, you see what I did there? No, a fan, a big, massive fan on the ground, and now we're just...
We are fans.
I'm with Tristan.
What great work over there. What great work over there in the distance.
As long as I can see the work without moving from this fan, then that's all good. Do you know this photographer?
No, actually.
Can you pronounce her name?
No, actually.
Okay, guys, I know this is not professional, but
we can't... You're a fan.
There's a Czech photographer from way back when. Oh, look, let me try and pronounce her name. Hang on, hold tight. Okay, it's Libuš Jakov-Jakova. Evocative is the title. It's something like that. And it's a huge show. All black and white stuff. Very nicely framed and presented in a very very, very big and lovely space. Ah, I love that picture. Now I know what I'm looking at. There is a picture of, well, someone lying prone, a woman just in her pants and a top, and she's got a glass perched on her... not on her lower abdomen, and there's a little hand reaching in, just pulling on her underwear. But it's kind of, I like it. It's sweet. The word is, it's sweet. Okay, it's not like I'm not. It's not being prurient. It's a sweet picture to me, anyway, personally. Now Jack Latham is still trying to locate his unique copy of Parliament of Owls. So just to give you an update, it has now been established that the book is here somewhere. It hasn't not been delivered, but we don't know where. So Jack is still in the process of attempting to track it down. And his colleague at Here Press, Ben Weaver, has been diligently trying to communicate with various people. Thankfully, Ben speaks French, so that helps. But it hasn't really helped much in this particular case, because we still don't know where the book is. As soon as the book arrives, I will be sure to let you know, because I'm going to be there when Jack gets to see it. But for now, no book. Let me talk to Keith from Satanta Books. Keith, I wanted to ask you about your business, I suppose. You were just selling books, but now you've recently published a few as well. But I want to just get a bit of backstory, because before that you were running a record label. So tell us a little bit about how you got into running a record label business.
As with photography, I probably learned it as I went along, to be honest with you. When I was a kid, I always wanted to have a record label. That was my dream. So I did it and made lots of mistakes and learned from the mistakes, in a way. And then that, the music business was going downhill. I was getting older. Feeling a bit, not feeling old, sorry for myself, but feeling old as in maybe I should be doing something else. And then I started selling books, fiction books, and I'd always had an interest in photography books, because a lot of the time the bands would have no idea what to put on the cover of the record, so that fell down to me to some extent. So I'd find photographers that I liked, Harry Borden being one, and he did a cover for us. Different, more music related photographers worked with, so there was always the interest in photography there. And when I was selling the rare books online, which I still do, there was no interaction with creative people. It was purely commercial, and I guess the desire to publish books, photography books with photographers, came to me because I wanted to get back to having that creative relationship with creative people. And it's just slowly evolved. I didn't think, made it up as I went along, to be honest with you.
So you were just a music fan as a kid, and you just like were into music, so you figured be an interesting thing to run a record label, basically.
Yeah, but when I was a kid, there were indie record labels that you followed in a similar way that you'd follow a certain photographer's work or a certain band's work. So there would always be record labels that I thought were the kind of labels that I would want to be if I started a label. And I guess in that same way, you can see that with photography publishing, with certain publishers that you really like their books.
Yeah, so it's about the publisher as much as it is about the actual artist involved with them.
Yes, to some extent, or the style of what they do with the books that they choose, etc.
Right. But then, like, I get why you got into selling books, and you that was also another interest, and that became a business. And then it seemed like an obvious transition almost to then obviously start selling photography books, because you were interested in that. But then the decision to then try and do a bit of publishing as well, how did that come about? And so that was through wanting to have a more of a kind of working relationship with the creative people, you say?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, the first one was kind of accidental. There's a band called Warpaint. Their tour manager is a photographer, and taking photos of them on the road. Somebody who I knew music related asked if I would be up for publishing a book with them, and that's how that happened. The second one with Megan Doherty, who I think you've mentioned in the past, She was on Instagram. I really liked her feeds. Actually, I saw her at Paris Photo. She had an exhibition at Paris Photo, and that's when I picked up on it. And I just got in touch with her and asked her if she'd be interested. And with that book, in a way, it was not a conventional book. It was like a big pack of Rizla papers that turned into posters. So because of the nature of the project, it's called Stoned and Melancholy, and it's about her friends, teen friends, having a good time in Derry. Mm. So it lent itself to a different format. And I like, coming from selling rare books and knowing what the value of a rare book is in the dust jacket most of the time, not in the book. So I know what's perishable and what makes things collectible in the book world. And in a way, I thought that would work. And I didn't want to do it for the sake of novelty. I had a lot of doubt about it. And another photographer, mutual photographer friend of ours, told me that she wasn't sure about it. And that gave me doubt. But then Megan was really keen on the format. So I went, okay, let's pursue this. Mm. So it wasn't novelty for the sake of novelty. There was an idea behind it. And also it was a little bit about trying to democratize it. Like when Mark Neville was on your podcast, he talked about that whole coffee table book of war photographs. And that kind of stuck with me in a way, because it's one of those things of like, with Megan's book, given the demographic of the people who are in it and the people who I felt would be buying it, I wanted them to stick the images up as posters on their walls, rather than for it to be a precious entity.
Right. So I'm trying to get from you, in a way, a little insight, and I'm always, we talk about this quite a bit, and I talk to many people about it, but the economics behind the photography book publishing game, and it's something which, for whatever reason, continues to confuse me, or something which I find, I don't know, hard to kind of get a grip on. But maybe you could talk a little bit about it from your position. Because you kind of have joked almost, or half-joked, that it's more a labour of love than a business thing, really, right? I mean, yeah. Is it possible for you as the publisher to... Well, is it possible for anyone, really, to make any money, the publisher or the photographer? What's your kind of take on the whole thing?
In time it is. In the same way as working with bands, when I had the record label, you sign 10 bands, 2 of them might be successful, 8 of them might disappear. With photographers, even if they are successful, the best case scenario is sometimes breaking even on a book. But the books I publish, I finance. The photographer gives me prints to a mutually agreed value. I sit on them. If that photographer has a future career, then those prints will have a value. That's when I will earn from it. Mm. But also, I want to work with photographers on a long term. With a band, you're not just looking at one record, you're looking at developing a career. And the funny thing about when working in music, you're constantly having a creative rapport, and that's a very important part of developing a band. Photographers work in isolation, and that they don't have that sounding board, and I'd like to try and be that sounding board as much as possible.
Mm. So you... still making it up as you go along to some extent, or are you a bit clear about kind of what your future plans are for Satanta then?
I make everything up as I go along, to be honest with you. I'm not a forward planner, but things click into place. I don't let things drop. So yeah, I make it up, to be honest with you.
And what's the immediate plan? Have you got projects in the pipeline as far as publishing?
There should be another 2 or 3 books that we publish this year. I would say next year we'll publish 6 books, probably. The issue is keeping a balance between, because it's 2 of us at the moment, so it's the selling books is what we make money out of. Publishing books is not necessary.
Yeah, selling books.
The books that we buy to sell,
right,
rather than the books we publish.
Yeah.
But then equally, the books that we've published have probably made people aware of our website and look to buy other books from us. So there's an element of advertising or marketing in that.
But also it sounds to me like your model is kind of speculative, in the sense that you're taking a punt in a way on the career of that person, because, like you say, you're not going to make any money from the book thing, but you might eventually make some money from the prints that you're given.
Yeah, everything's speculative in this. There is no cash cow in this business, really. It's, if you're going to make money as a photographer, it's a long-term thing. So, yes, it's all speculative.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Keith. That's actually very useful insight for me to have your perspective on that. And also because there's so many different ways of kind of going about it, it seems. So, you know, it's not like there's one model that everyone seems to follow. It's like there's 10 different ways of trying to make it work.
I think the thing is that following that rule of the best case scenario is to break even on publishing a book for a photographer and for publisher, then you've got to do it because you enjoy it. It's got to be enjoyable as well. And you've got to have faith in the work. Mm. And that's the most important thing, because you can't look at it in monetary terms.
Jack, can I just get an update? So, as far as I'm aware, we're not going to dwell on this too much, but what's the latest with the book?
Someone called Flo has signed for it, and their signature is a circle, and nobody, it seems, in the whole of Arles knows who this Flo person is.
Okay, so the mystery continues. No. Well, it will happen. It will happen, Jack. We'll get it. Okay, we're moving on to a new exhibition. Maya Daniels is here. She's signing copies of her new book, Elf Dahlia. She's a friend of the podcast. How's it going, Maya?
It's going well.
How many have you signed?
It's unclear. Eight?
Eight. Not bad. That's not bad. The goal is 13 to beat the La Winship.
Yeah, but I've sold out. There are no more books.
No way.
Yeah.
Well, that's a result. I reckon you win by default then. You beat her.
I could never win.
Why?
Because there were never 13 books.
Well, you sold them all, so that's it, as far as I'm concerned. All right, we're going on. Hi, what's your name?
Sophie.
Sophie, and
yes.
Ben. Very nice to see you.
Very nice to meet you.
Now, there is one kind of Arles tradition which I'm not going to be able to report to you from. That is the annual Women in Photography pool party, which takes place, I don't know how many years it's been going on for. I don't know too much about the history of it. I think Hannah Watson from Trolley Books is intimately involved with the origins of it, but you know, anything for you, my listener. I was going to take myself off there and bring you some kind of report from an exclusively all-female event, and I would obviously have been the token male, but thought I could probably get away with it on account of my status as the official reporter. But then turns out maybe not, so I'm not going to do it, and I'm going to let the gals get on with it and be on their own. So nothing from there for you. Sorry guys, but I think it's the only sensible option. I may have ended up face down in the pool otherwise, floating and lifeless, and I don't want that to happen, and hopefully neither do you. Right, never mind the women in photography debacle, although I have since discovered that there are a number of men there, about five apparently. I'm not one of them, but I'd rather err on the side of caution, to be honest. And maybe those five, maybe they're not welcome, you know. But I digress. The more important news, stop press, folks. The book, the Jack Latham book, of which we have spoken extensively, his new book, The Parliament of Owls, the only available copy in the world, has finally been located. How are you feeling, Jack?
I am relieved. I am not sure if I'm sweating because of the heat or just because of sheer happiness, but we know where the book is.
Okay, and where is it actually?
Mr. DHL decided to forge a signature and didn't like the roads of Arles and didn't attempt a delivery, so he just forged it and is planning to deliver it tomorrow now.
Oh my god, thank you, Mr. DHL driver. I suspect he was just overwhelmed by the heat and decided to go home and have a cool lie down, thought fuck this is probably not very important, I'll just pretend it got.
If I was him, yeah, I'd probably stop to look at some of the shows. I don't, but I hope you're not sponsored by DHL, because fuck them.
I'm not, no. They have stepped up to the plate though and offered you a full refund, which is good, because it was a very expensive delivery, that was, all the way from the UK. Was it the UK?
No, from Germany.
Okay, all the way from Germany to Arles. Yeah, because the binders are in Germany. So we've found the book, and there will be more on this story as it breaks.
Okay, I'm actually in another show, which has the distinct advantage of being air-conditioned. But the work is by Helen Levitt, and it's pretty big, pretty extensive exhibition. And mainly showcasing her black and white work. I always think of her very much for her colour work, but of course she also mainly worked, I think, initially in black and white. So most of this exhibition is that black and white stuff. And then a little bit of it is the colour, these very lovely dye transfer prints, which look particularly gorgeous, as you might expect them to. But if you don't know about Helen Levitt, you should check her out, Levitt. It's quite an important photographer. Oh yeah, also above the Helen Levitt exhibition, there's a kind of group show, three female photographers, Eve Arnold, Abigail Heyman, and Susan Micellas. And collectively, the exhibition is called The Unretouched Woman. So, work from all three of those photographers. It's very quiet in here, so I'm whispering. So, Susan Micellas' famous carnival strippers' pictures are here. Don't know if I've ever seen prints of those, but they look very good. Abigail Heyman did a thing called Growing Up Female, which is kind of a little handmade personal project in 1974. I think that was quite influential. Eve Arnold, most of you will know, Magnum photographer. Oh, wait.
Or who let Keith out of the booth? So, accidentally left you in there.
Keith needs some air, I think.
So, what is the latest with the book, Jack? Are we confused again?
We're confused again. Very confused.
We thought. We still don't know if it's been delivered.
Apparently, it's been delivered to someone called Florence, but there's no one in the whole company called Florence, so.
But I thought we'd gone past that phase.
We had, but I don't think the head department is talking to the local Arles branch. So when I spoke to Mr. Arles branch man, he's very confused.
Okay, so we're all very confused again, and nobody knows where the book is. We still don't know if it's here or not. Maybe someone's gone home with it. They loved it so much. Anyway,
it's gonna be like Liam Neeson. So I will find you, and I will hunt you down.
We're in the car. We're on our way again into town. Keith is in the boot of the car. Well, no, it's not really the boot. We can't say that, but. He's in the back.
Searching for the owl.
And it's still very hot.
The owl of owl.
The owl of owl.
We're on our way.
Okay, well, maybe we will, at some point today, get a result with the book, but I wouldn't hold your breath.
Thanks, mate.
Sorry, Jack. Poor Jack. Poor Jack, he's on a roller coaster of emotion here.
Looking at the background, I don't think Jack's going to get his book. So thanks, Ben.
No, I'm just trying to manage expectations for the listeners, man. Yeah. You know, this is an ongoing narrative thread, okay?
Keith's just ducked out of the boot because he thought the cops were coming.
There's a group show here called Home Sweet Home, the British Home of Political History, 1970 to 2018, I think it is. There are lots of different British photographers, mainly, all part of that same group show. So David Sparrow is one of them, and Andy Sill, who will be coming on the podcast quite soon, hopefully, and David Moore, who I don't know, but again, very active in the 70s and 80s. Colin Thomas, same kind of era, but black and white instead of colour. Lots of really interesting people, actually, lesser known people. A guy called John Myers, who some of you might have heard of, but really lovely portraits from kind of the series called Middle England, black and white stuff, domestic scenes, very 70s. So, you know, always discovering new people. And of course, Daniel Meadows and Martin Parr are also represented, as you might expect. And Ken Grant, of course. Now, Ken was supposed to be on the podcast, but unfortunately, I wasn't able to talk to him. So we will have to try and schedule that in the UK at some point. It was a bit of a balls up, but
I was meant to speak to Ken here in Arles. Nice to see his work on the wall, though. Obviously renowned for having shot extensively in Liverpool, mainly during, I don't know, I guess the 80s and 90s, you'd say. And, yeah, Ken's work is titled There's No Such Thing as Society. Words infamously spoken by Margaret Thatcher, the former UK Prime Minister from that era. So, yeah, sorry, Ken. Hope we can get you on soon. George Giorgio is here. He's a friend of the podcast. Hello, George.
Hello, Ben.
What's going on? Have you seen something of interest?
It's actually been incredibly hard to see anything because it's so hot here, and by the time you get to a place, you're already sweating, and then you go inside and your temperature goes up another 10 degrees as well. I actually haven't seen a lot. I did go to see the Tom Wood, which I absolutely loved.
See, I haven't seen that yet. And I'm glad you said that, because I said exactly the same thing, and I'm kind of worried about boring people with this constant narrative about the fact that it's so hot, but it is true. It has an impact on how you look at these shows. I mean, it's like the ones with the aircon are the better work, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also when you're seeing, there's so much work to see, there's so many places to go to, and if you're on fire, you know, your brain's on fire, you can't take anything in.
No, I just said exactly that. So thank you very much for backing me up, George. That's exactly what I just said to the listeners. It's really, really difficult. And you end up kind of walking around going, this is too something. You have to reduce everything to two syllables because you have to conserve the energy.
Yeah, no, I mean, if they had some more air conditioning, it would be perfect. Because there's places that, I mean, there are images that I'd like to sit and look at, but there's just no way I can do that. I mean, I quite like this archival, scientific objects, particularly the ones with the portraits, the people with the object. But it kind of reminds me also, because me and Vanessa, when many years ago, we did something for the Science Museum where we were basically photographing with the curators of the different objects, their collection.
Yeah.
So it's very much the same type of approach as this.
Yeah, but these ones were shot, how old are these ones? They're from back in the day, aren't they?
I think they're from 1917 onwards.
Okay. So what about these ones that you've got in the show? Tell me a little bit about those, the ones you did in Cyprus. Because you've got a little, I think it's part of a group thing, but you've got a very small number of images showing.
Yeah, so it's an exhibition called Walls of Power, and I think it's kind of split into three sections, and it's on kind of the borders and barriers of Europe. And my small contribution is six images that I've photographed in Cyprus, something like 2005, and it was I was there to do a talk on my Turkey work on the Turkish Cypriot side of the border. But whenever I'm in Cyprus and Nicosia, you always have to walk in the old city to the Green Line, just to have a little peer over the other end. And you can do it from both ends now, so it's. But I happened to be going there, and I noticed that usually there's a couple of Greek soldiers stationed there, and they weren't there. I think they must have just skipped off for lunch or something, and. I saw this kind of opening through the building, so I just kind of walked through, and I found these, you know, these. In each house there was a bunker situation. It was nicely swept and clean. It's like very, because there's a stagnant sort of conflict. You don't really need to go in there and do anything. You just go in there and clean it, I think. And there was holes going between the houses on the Green Line, so I just kind of walked through six houses, photographed six rooms. I was in and out in 10 minutes, and it wasn't something I'd really, you know, I kind of liked the images and so on, but they just went on my blog site, and that was the end of it. And somehow this guy found them on my blog site, which has been inactive for about 10 years.
It's really nice to know that this stuff can be, you know, can have a second life kind of thing, or have a life so long after you originally shot it, you know, suddenly it's just relevant to something and there it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of photography, I think. There isn't a sell-by date, really.
No, exactly.
Thank you, George. As usual, a marvellous contribution. I do appreciate it, mate. Thank you so much for chatting. So we're down on the river, Rhone. It's very beautiful, and everyone's down here kind of having a little do. Little sickle moon, it's a little bit cooler down here, and it's quite nice to get out of town as well. I don't know what this is all about, I don't know what the deal is really, but
you just kind of go with the flow. But we're literally on the riverbank. It was very beautiful. And Marina Polenka of Organ Vida fame and now Unseen fame is just giving me some kind of heinous Croatian hooch, basically, that she probably made in her shed in Zagreb. So it's actually very drinkable. I'm quite enjoying it. There is also a sort of projection onto one of the buildings, kind of an ad hoc slideshow. I don't know what the work is, but it does look pretty nice. I mean, it's very effective to do it there straight onto a building, you know what I mean? You don't need to mess about, really. It's good enough. Let's talk to Amanda Fordyce. Fordyce, come here. You're about to fall in the fucking Rhone.
Hola. How's your day been?
Yeah, not bad. How are you?
I'm good.
I feel like you're kind of an old hand at Arles.
A what?
An old hand. It means you've been many times and you're experienced.
I have, and I was just saying this party is getting bigger and bigger. It's like the little break-off rebel party for the main party. Like everyone's supposed to go to the main party.
Right.
We're all
this
here.
This is the place.
Yeah.
This is the place to be.
This is it.
How's it been this year for you?
It's been good. I can't say it's been great work-wise, but friendship, fun, party-wise.
Network-wise, probably not the best.
No. It's been a lot of rosé.
Yeah, I can tell. It's good. It ain't all about the work. It is the 50th edition, which one would imagine was going to be a bit of a big thing, but a lot of people have said that the work isn't that good. I don't really know. I never really know. Ash, what have you seen? This is Ash. She's a multi-hyphenate,
for sure. Home from Home was amazing. Anonymous project. That was
okay.
Yeah, I love that. It's a lot of it's based in the Northeast, so I enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, because you're from.
Because I'm from that.
That manor.
Newcastle.
Yeah. Fordyce, you're from Australia.
It's just quite adorable.
I know.
Really?
This is
an adorable look for you.
Does he work in sound?
Why? Who said that?
My friend Tom.
I wonder. Yeah. I work in sound, I work in pictures, I work in many different mediums.
You do.
Okay, well, this is gibberish, but, you got to start somewhere.
Exactly.
Thank you for contributing. No, I didn't mean that in a bad way. I was talking about myself. I'm talking about you two.
Talk to Tom Parker.
Do you know Tom Parker? Hello, Tom.
Good evening.
What brings you here?
These two ladies here. They invited me here on a very, very dirty weekend.
Okay.
Nothing's being fulfilled quite yet, unfortunately.
There's still time.
Tom,
there is still time, exactly.
I hate to break this to you. I hate to be the one to break this to you, but you know it ain't going to happen, don't you?
Have you spoken to those two? I know. Don't be so bloody presumptuous, man.
You've been brought here under false pretenses. You should have been enjoying the photography and the culture, never mind all this other stuff. Are you a photographer?
I am.
You are a small voice listener, aren't you?
But we had heard it was also a very famous dogging spot. And I was here with Basie Amanda and Greg Fennell, who was also here for the dogging.
Okay, I'm off, bye. So, yeah, there you go. If you're not English and you don't know what dogging is, don't Google it. Just forget about it. You don't want to know. Let's talk to Marina Polenka. Yo, Polenka, thanks for the hooch. It was very nice.
Yay!
I enjoyed it.
You're enjoying! Super!
How are you? How's it going for you?
Sweat, but good.
Yeah, okay, good. Are you excited about your new job?
I'm so exciting. So
exciting.
Happy.
You're exciting.
But
you
really,
know
what to say, honestly, I'm really exciting.
Yeah, it's great.
This is totally new start for me. I'm changing all my life. I'm leaving Croatia. My baby Organ Vida is starting with something new, and I think it's so challenging.
Of course.
I mean, you know,
you're the right
change,
woman. You're
to change
right.
When everything is actually good, to change with something even, you know.
Right, yeah, that's a brave thing to do.
Yeah.
It's good, man. You're the right person to do it.
Yeah,
very excited.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. So, see you later. And thank you for that. It's very good. That's Marina Polenka, who's now the, director of the Unseen Festival in Amsterdam. Was the creator and director of Organ Vida Festival in Croatia, which is a great little festival, which I went to only once. but I enjoyed a lot, and met Marina there. We've been best of mates ever since. Oh, fucking hell. It's gone quite badly.
Elle est à Actes Sud, parce qu'il y a plusieurs...
Actes Sud, juste
voilà,
là.
Juste là, voilà.
Ok, ça va.
Mais j'ai Madame Chilo.
Chilo.
Chilo, elle m'a appelé. Voilà, elle m'a appelé, je vais le récupérer, là.
Ah,
je vais le récupérer et je vais l'envoyer à truc.
Aujourd'hui?
Voilà, là, maintenant.
Ah,
là.
Ok.
Je vais livrer là, je livre deux colis et après je vais le prendre.
Merci, hein? Merci.
Vous allez au 34?
Okay. 34 maintenant, oui.
Mais vous partez maintenant là-bas?
Oui, oui.
Ok, donc je vous rejoins là-bas, je viens là-bas tout de suite.
Ok, merci. Ok, he's gonna go.
Can you say he's delivered it today?
Wait.
Yeah, he delivered it. He picked it up to bring it to there.
Today?
Yes, he's going to go there now.
Okay, I think we might have just had the most extraordinary coincidence. Because Keith Cullen there, who does speak French, was talking to the DHL guy who... Was that a coincidence that DHL guy is the guy?
He was just there. I just saw him. And I just thought, strike where they are.
Okay, so Keith just saw a random DHL van as we got out of the cab. And astonishingly enough, it was the man who is going to or has just delivered the book. Now, that is quite a coincidence, you've got to say.
I will say I would recommend you all to buy your books from Keith from now on.
Keith Cullen from Satanta Books is the hero of the hour. But also, that DHL driver seemed like he was a very nice man and didn't seem like the sort of person who'd fake a signature or anything like that. So maybe that was his colleague, but that's pretty remarkable. So you must be feeling a bit more optimistic now, Jack.
Do you know, I've been through the ringer with this, mate. I've just, at this point, I'm, you know, everyone's been promising things. There's not been anything delivered. So when it's in my hands, I'll be happy.
Until it's in your hands, you're not going to take anything for granted.
It's been a saga. I think I could have solved the Bohemian Grove mystery in the time it's taking me to get this fucking book in.
Keith, what did the geezer actually say? Has he delivered it or is he about to deliver it?
He delivered it yesterday. They told him they had to deliver it to a different address that wasn't the address at the place. And then they rang him today and said he had to bring it to where he originally tried to deliver it. Where they told him not to deliver it.
That's fucking clear as mud. No wonder this is happening. Listeners, if you've been following this better than I have, then maybe you got some sense out of that. Keith very kindly tried to explain. I still have no idea. But all I know is there will eventually be a book. Okay, I think this is probably the last show I'm going to see. So I've seen about maybe three or four now. Today, this is all on Saturday. Going home tomorrow, still it's 1,000 degrees centigrade. Brain is boiling, definitely beer o'clock, definitely beer o'clock. But just at the Christian Lutz exhibition, Christian Lutz is, I believe, a Swiss photographer, has done a lot of projects on casinos, I think both in the USA and then subsequently in China. And so he's got a couple of books on that subject, and this is the show of the same work, and it looks really great actually. I like it a lot, so you can have a look at that. There's also an absolutely massive fan which I'm about to go and stand next to. Oh yes, okay, this is awesome. And the pictures are printed very big, so I can still appreciate quite a few of them while standing next to the massive fan. Okay, I can move on.
Did you get my text about...
Yeah, please, I
fine. Let me know
adventure.
About, like, your Paris address and I'll
the adventure
mail
of the lost book. Yeah.
Okay, I will send it to you, like right now.
We found it.
I'm so sorry for taking so much of your time.
Okay. Go ahead, open your book.
Thank you very much.
So... Sorry, yeah. Jack Latham's just been handed a package. It very much looks book-shaped.
Maybe you want something to open.
Do you have a scissors? Missing. Hey, thank you so much.
May I sort of ceremonially hand you the scissors, Jack? So we've been through this, we've been through this together, and the listeners, of course.
You know, if this book is terrible, I'm going to be like, this is going to be the biggest letdown I've had since the last episode of Game of Thrones.
Okay, it's a book, and it is. The book.
It's like a pamphlet.
So it's softback.
It's a super floppy book. So.
And what's the cover?
The cover is basically, I was reading, one thing conspiracy theorists always quote is George Orwell as like as the worst case scenario for a dystopian of the Illuminati. And his diary that he writes in at the beginning of the book is a, the words completely left me. What's this called?
Marbling.
Like, marbled cover. No, yeah. And so so me and Ben were talking about referencing Orwell somewhere in the book because it's like Big Brother in the room that, you know, that they all meet. And so every page, there's a, you can peek inside and there's another thing where you can kind of learn more. Or so, for example, there's this with Mr. Jones.
Oh, right. So, kind of, yeah. The page is like, it's like two pages are sealed at the bottom, as it were.
Yeah.
If you can imagine that, people.
So there's basically two narratives going on. There's like reading between the lines.
Right. So the question is, do you want to explain this to everyone right now, or you want to do it later? Because it's quite involved and it's quite complex.
I can do it now. There's a secret gentleman's club in California. That meet every year, and they watch this big ceremony under a massive statue of an owl in the woods, and it sounds crazy, but it's true. And it's presidents go there, and the top 1% of American society, and it's basically just a boys' club. And in the year 2000, because there's really secretive about what goes on inside, a then unknown Alex Jones and a British writer John Ronson broke in, and then Alex Jones secretly filmed this ceremony called the Cremation of Care, which is like they burn an effigy under this massive statue of an owl, and then released it and then claimed that they were killing children and sacrificing humans. And then because of that, Alex Jones rose to incredible fame.
So maybe you need to explain quickly who Alex Jones is for people who don't know.
InfoWars is the website that he's most kind of attributed with. You won't find a contemporary conspiracy that probably was not spawned out of InfoWars. So the Barack Obama birth certificate conspiracy, all of those, Sandy Hook being a false flag, all comes from Jones. And in 2016, he got so famous that President-elect Donald Trump appeared on his show to campaign. And Donald Trump is an admitted watcher of InfoWars. So this is a president now that's...
So the Sandy Hook thing you're talking about is that he basically claimed that the Sandy Hook massacre, the school massacre, was fake, basically.
Yeah, it was a false flag. And then basically his insinuation was, it's a very popular conspiracy, is that, you know, these false flag attacks are used as a way to revoke gun access in America. So it's kind of the dangers of absence of information lets people project new meaning. And then leads to the rise of Donald Trump. So that's what the idea is.
So at what point did you come into the story then as someone who, you know, thinking it might be interesting? Was it at that point?
No. So, I mean, that happened, it's 20 years ago next year that when they first broke in. And so over 20 years, Alex Jones has risen and risen and risen. So I started the work in 2018. I took a year not photographing after Sugar Paper Theories. Because it was kind of, I would think I was a bit creatively fatigued. And because I'd been socializing a lot with conspiracy theorists anyway, Bohemian Grove kept coming up as, it's very, quite well known.
Yeah, you've been socializing with conspiracy theorists because Sugar Paper Theories, you know, that was a big element of that, just to sort of explain to people. Yeah. So, like, how do you go about shooting something which is complex and, you know, really about ideas?
I mean, in the same way, Sugar Paper Theories was about memory. And these people misremembering things. I'm photographing something that happened. You know, I always use history as a foundation for my work and revisit places. And it's kind of photographing things, leaving things out. It creates atmosphere, I think.
Because you didn't get access to this actual place that they use as their sort of HQ. So you had to find a way around. You had to find other things to photograph, essentially.
Your viewers won't be able to see it, but this is a photo of the car park of Bohemian Grove. And so it's this idea of like peering through gaps in trees and you know, the same idea of like being excluded. And, you know, it started because, you know, I don't think that men-only spaces are necessarily a good thing, especially when they're private. And it's a men-only club. And especially when it's the top 1% of American
and, you know, the World Society, businesses, FTSE 500 companies.
It's like a Masons kind of thing, like the Masons we have in the UK, and well, they have there in the US as well.
Yeah, the Americans have really, they've glamorized Masonry, Freemasonry, in the sense that it's a pageant. And so they've got these kind of strange rituals, skull and crossbones, and, you know, they're all juvenile. My belief is, you know, there's nothing seedy goes on in terms of sacrificing humans to goats. But it is alarming that the most influential men in the world discuss policy, discuss business politics, and you know, the rest of civilization is cut off from these conversations, not least 50%, you know, women. So it's like there's this space that exists that's kind of a fabric of American society which leads the rest of the way for the world, and these men are meeting in private talking about very publicly affected things.
But what's confusing to me is that there's this kind of lunacy around the whole conspiracy theory thing, because, like, no sensible people think these people are talking sense. But it's almost like those who, not all of these people who go to this thing necessarily go along with that. They're using it as a different purpose. They're using it as a kind of power space.
Yeah, well, listen, I understand if you're the CEO of a company and you have billions of pounds or dollars, you know, at your disposal, and a mistake could mean thousands of people losing their job. There's only a few people in the world that you can talk about your problems, and when the press isn't around, and I can understand why it's sacred to them, but the project is like, when there's a vacuum of context or vacuum of any information, it just opens up to people to project new meaning onto that. And so this other photo we're opened on is, this is a guy that watched the documentary Alex Jones put out and then broke in dressed as a superhero, armed with a shotgun, grenade, a mortar device, and a knife, because he was convinced that they were sacrificing children. So it's like these things have real implications, and it's kind of the dangers of conspiracies. They kind of, it's like a fire, it will just go grow and grow and grow and grow. And the more silent you are, the brighter the flame. So,
well, it's a great delight and a relief to see it sitting there, Jack, having been through the ringer. Congratulations, mate.
Thank you very much.
Not on the book, just on the fact that it got delivered. No,
I
on
survived.
The book as well.
It survived. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okie dokie, so it is now 1:30 on Sunday morning, so relatively early doors, because things go pretty late here. I am heading back to the accommodation with some friends to get some sleep, or have a little swim and then get some sleep. So that's all done and dusted. There was a closing party type thing, but I didn't go. We didn't go because it's a bit of a schlep. And now we have a bit of a schlep to go home to where we're staying, which is like a 30-minute walk, something like that. Hope you enjoyed this Small Voice podcast special. Look, it wasn't professional, I know. If you want professional, I would recommend Radio 4, where they do this kind of shit properly. But if you want this kind of nonsense, then good. I'm glad you're listening. Thank you very much, and good night.